From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Rebel forces close in on Liberia's capital, Monrovia. The country's indicted president, Charles Taylor, says he will step down if U.S. peacekeeping troops are deployed. But Taylor is not known for keeping promises, and George Bush is wary of jumping into a new conflict when U.S. troops are still deep in Iraq and Afghanistan. Liberians tell the U.S. president they would welcome American soldiers. Experts say even a nominal troop presence would cool the violence. Tonight on Point, history and nation building in Liberia, Africa's piece of America. We begin in Johannesburg, South Africa, one of five countries on President Bush's five-day gallop through Africa. The president will land in Senegal tomorrow morning and then travel to Botswana, South Africa, Uganda, and Nigeria, all relative success stories on a hard-luck continent. Nicole Itano is reporting on the president's trip for the Christian Science Monitor. I asked her what Africans make of President Bush's upcoming visit.
Well, I think there is quite a bit of skepticism about this trip, and I think there's a lot of people here who are wondering what the president's motivations are for coming to Africa. The general sentiment here was very anti-war in terms of the war in Iraq. There's a lot of people here who think that Bush is coming here because of Africa's oil, because he wants something out of free trade with Africa, and because he wants to make himself look better in the world's eyes by being seen as to be doing something for Africa. So I think that there is that skepticism. At the same time, I think that people here are happy that Africa is back on the world map, that people are paying attention to some of the very serious issues that are happening here.
Nicole, is there a common theme in the countries that President Bush will visit? Senegal, South Africa, Botswana, Uganda, Nigeria. Is there a thread here?
Yes. I mean, I think that Bush has, in his itinerary, has chosen countries that are really success stories as far as Africa goes, for very different reasons. Senegal, the first country on his trip, is one of the longest, most stable democracies in West Africa. South Africa is the economic powerhouse of the continent and emerging really as one of the political leaders. Botswana is the fastest growing economy, as well as a country that has recently made a commitment to provide universal antiretrovirals. Uganda is a country where it's one of the few countries that has really effectively tackled the AIDS issue and actually brought down the number of infections. And of course, Nigeria is also an economic powerhouse and quite an important country in terms of regional stability, particularly in West Africa. So the countries that he's chosen here are countries that are very important for the future of Africa and generally, by and large, are countries that are doing things well.
So relatively successful countries, but in all, even of these, AIDS is a big issue. It's been big on President Bush's agenda in Washington. What is the AIDS situation in Africa today, if you can generalize?
Well, across the continent, and this is the continent with the by far the most people who are HIV positive, there are about 30 million people who are HIV positive. There were 3.5 million new infections last year, 10 million AIDS orphans. It is quite a staggering problem. Here in South Africa, there's about 5 million HIV positive people. It's the largest number of any country in the world. Neighboring Botswana, which is also on Bush's agenda, has the highest percentage of HIV positive people in the world, 38%. Which is just a staggering, staggering figure. So yes, AIDS is a huge problem for Africa. At the same time, I think that Bush, again, has chosen countries that by and large are doing things or trying to do things to tackle this.
President Bush has pledged $15 billion over the next 5 years to help Africa deal with AIDS. Is that seen as a godsend or a drop in the bucket?
Initially, when President Bush made the announcement that $15 billion would be allocated for HIV in Africa, people were quite surprised and quite happy about this. I think there's been growing skepticism about whether that's actually going to be funded at the levels that President Bush has promised. There's been some reports recently that Mr. Bush has not asked for the amount that people expected, the amount that would be required to fund this fully at $15 billion for the next 5 years. And there's also some question about the methods that he's chosen to do this. Only a small percentage of that money is going to go through the Global Fund, which is the United Nations Global Fund for HIV, and the rest will be given unilaterally to 14 of the most HIV-affected countries. And there are some people who are questioning why, when you have this international framework for dealing with the issue, why President Bush has chosen to do this, to address this problem unilaterally.
And beyond AIDS, what kind of issues do you expect the heads of state that President Bush is meeting with will be putting to him?
Well, certainly Liberia is going to be high on the agenda, though I think that's something that President Bush didn't expect to be high on the agenda. But with the events there in recent weeks, particularly with President Charles Taylor's decision to resign and to go into asylum in Nigeria, that's certainly going to be an issue.
Do you think leaders will be African leaders will be pushing President Bush to intervene with U.S. troops or not?
I think so. I think that there is a sense that something needs to go. The international community needs to intervene in Liberia. And if you look in recent cases like the Ivory Coast and Congo, it's been France who has intervened, primarily because of their historical interests in those countries. And generally, those interventions have been successful, particularly in Ivory Coast. And so I think there is a lot of pressure on America to intervene in Liberia, because the feeling is if somebody's going to intervene, it's probably going to be the United States. And there is a sense that there does need to be some sort of international intervention. So I think that there will be pressure, though, again, there are disagreements about whether the United States should send troops directly or whether they should fund a West African peacekeeping unit. I think Zimbabwe is also going to be very high on the agenda, and that's something that the administration has been playing up in recent days, most notably with Colin Powell's editorial op-ed in the New York Times last week.
So leaders there will be pressuring Washington to help put pressure on Robert Mugabe?
No, I think in that case it's the opposite. I think that George Bush and the Bush administration are putting pressure on African countries to be harder on Robert Mugabe. Mm-hmm. Particularly South Africa has generally taken a stance of what they call quiet diplomacy, which is that they haven't been very outspoken against the regime. They've said that they've been trying to put themselves in a position of negotiation and mediation. And I think the Bush administration would like to see South Africa in particular take a harder stance on Zimbabwe.
And what about on the front of trade and economics? What message is President Bush likely to hear?
Well, I think we're going to hear a lot about free trade and the benefits of free trade for Africa. And I think that's something that generally, again, President Bush and the African leaders that he's meeting with agree on. I think President Mbeki of South Africa and President Mohai of Botswana agree that there needs to be a greater investment and would like to see a greater Western investment into Africa. At the same time, there are going to be some debates about, for example, American trade subsidies, and people saying that, well, all of these free trades and opening up of American markets is great, but when you actually look at the macroeconomic grand scheme of things, the trade subsidies, particularly in areas like cotton, are actually more detrimental to African economies than things like AGOA, which is a new free trade agreement, are beneficial.
And overall, does this trip, 5 days, five countries, appear likely to signal a greater interest on the part of Washington in Africa, or just a quick trip through?
Well, I think you have to remember that, you know, President Bush was, when he first came into office, said that he didn't really see the strategic interest of Africa to the United States. And I think that there definitely has been a change in the administration's attitude towards Africa, partly because of terrorism, partly because of a sense that there is a danger of failed states, and Africa has many failed states. But I think also because there is a sense that the president and the Bush administration would like to be seen as humanitarian actors in the world and like to be seen as doing something about AIDS and trade and helping Africa on a humanitarian level. How that will play out in terms of long-term commitments and long-term attention, it's still unclear.
Nicole Itano, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Nicole Itano is reporting on the president's Africa trip for the Christian Science Monitor. She spoke with us from Johannesburg, South Africa. Liberia is buckling under warring factions. Its people are constantly displaced by fighting. The country, founded by free slaves more than 150 years ago, is seeking help from the United States. Do you believe Washington will send troops? Do you want U.S. soldiers marching into yet another conflict? Does America have a moral obligation to its slave-era spinoff and Cold War partner in Africa? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is Sebastian Junger, journalist and author of The Perfect Storm and Fire. He returned from Monrovia, Liberia, 8 days ago, where he was on assignment for Vanity Fair. Good evening and welcome, Sebastian Junger.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. Sebastian, here's a country with a very long history with the United States, and yet many Americans know very, very little about it, sitting out there on the corner of West Africa, out on the chin of West Africa. You're just back. Before we get into it, paint a picture of just Liberia. What does it feel like? You were just there. What does it look like? What does it feel like? What is this country?
Well, it's the rainy season there. It was quite hot. There were very severe thunderstorms in the afternoons. It looks, at times, I almost want to say it looked like I was in the South. There were a lot of churches, a lot of sort of simple, low wooden buildings. The vegetation's pretty tropical. It sort of looks like your standard poor West African country. Every once in a while, I would sort of see something that just sort of made me flash to America. I definitely, at least in sort of in the air, in the society, you definitely feel some kinship with the South of this country.
So, some whiff of all that history. And what about the Civil War going on there? We understand now that two rebel groups, control most of the territory of Liberia, that it's not under the control of the President Charles Taylor there. Is evidence of the war in the corners? Is it everywhere? How does it show up?
Well, when I was there, I was there for about almost 2 weeks. I got back 8 days ago, as you said. The rebels were just a couple of kilometers from the center of town. I mean, you basically were penned into Monrovia. There was a route that you could, where we left to the north, to the northeast, all the way to the Ghanaian border. But mm-hmm. effectively, half the country has been sort of lopped off by the rebels. They started in 2000, the last in a succession of rebel movements designed to overthrow whatever regime was currently in power. Of course, Taylor took power by force, and a movement that was later validated by an election. But he was the head of a popular rebel group. Before him, President Doe took power by force. They have a long history of that, and presidents who've been deposed usually meet very violent ends. But when I was in Monrovia, it was absolutely a capital at war. I mean, people literally were walking at a crouch down the main street at times because they were afraid of bullets. So that atmosphere was unmistakable.
Sebastian Junger, what is at the heart of this civil war? Is it over resources? Is it ethnic? Is it tribal? How would you describe it?
Well, you can point to a lot of different factors that would cause conflict in that society. There's there's an issue of access to diamonds, to timber. There's violent divisions between the different tribes in Liberia. But as in the war in the Balkans, often those divisions are really exploited by people who ultimately are after power, and they may try to amplify and use to exploit tribal differences that otherwise may have been dormant. Ultimately, I think this war and the succession of wars that preceded this is a question of, it's a power struggle in the political structure in Liberia.
And did you get the feeling, Sebastian, that Liberians, or at least some of those you talked to, most or a minority, would they like to see American soldiers on the streets of Monrovia and beyond?
They're desperate to see American soldiers on the streets of Monrovia. I've never been to a country, I think, that had such overtly warm feelings towards the U.S. Maybe it was Kosovo after the U.S. intervention. Mm-hmm. As an American journalist walking around Kosovo, I had the feeling people were practically would want to throw flowers on us, you know, because we were American and the Americans had intervened and protected them against the Serbs. It's very much the same in Liberia, except we haven't gone there yet. If there's any anger at all in the street, it's people demanding, how could you forget us? We're your descendants. We're basically your cousins here. We're suffering in Liberia. We're dying slowly. And you're not helping us. You could stop this war in a few days if you wanted to, and you're not. Why? You know, what's the problem?
Sebastian, what did you come away thinking, that it's a good idea or not for American soldiers to be there?
I absolutely thought it was a good idea. In fact, I don't understand politically or morally, diplomatically, how we can't. To the west is Sierra Leone, where the British went in and in a matter of weeks stopped an atrocious war in its tracks, mm-hmm. with hardly any casualties. The same story happened to the east in Ivory Coast. The French went in a matter of a couple of weeks with hardly any casualties, stopped a potentially devastating war in its tracks.
And now there's the call for the U.S. to come in. Sebastian Junger, please stand by. It's great to have you tonight. We're talking about America's African stepchild, cousin, Liberia, and the call for U.S. intervention in civil war there. Do you believe the Bush administration is seriously considering sending troops into Liberia? Do you want American boots on the ground in an African intervention? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about America's African cousin, Liberia, and the call for U.S. intervention in Liberia's civil war. You can join the conversation. Freed slaves from the United States settled Liberia in 1822. Does America still have an obligation there? And how enduring are the demands of history? I guess President Bush said 2 years ago that Africa was not a strategic priority for the United States. Was he right? Should it be a priority now? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest tonight, Sebastian Junger, author of The Perfect Storm and Fire, just back from Liberia, where he was on assignment for Vanity Fair magazine. And we are joined now from Maryland by Janet Fleischman, Washington Director for Africa for Human Rights Watch. Good evening and welcome, Janet Fleischman.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Janet, take us back into this remarkable history of Liberia for just a moment, if you will, so we can understand what's going on there right now. How did it come to pass that American slaves were freed and returned to Liberia in 1822?
Well, it was part of a process that was a broader process of trying to establish some place in Africa where slaves could return to, and there was a movement in this country to support that. That gives you a sense of why there is so much feeling toward the United States that still remains in Liberia. They really feel like they were abandoned by their very important older brother or cousin, as Sebastian was saying, and those feelings run very deep.
And how close were the United States and Liberia during the Cold War? How significant a role did Liberia play in Washington's Cold War view of Africa?
During the Cold War, Liberia played a very important role. They had a CIA listening post there, a VOA transmitter. They had landing and refueling rights on 24-hour notice in Liberia. It was the highest recipient of U.S. aid in sub-Saharan Africa on a per capita basis. They really served an important function for a very long time, particularly during the Cold War. Mm-hmm. And in 1989, when Taylor launched his rebellion, and then in 1990, as the situation really became very serious and the rebels were on the outskirts of Monrovia, as far as Liberians could tell, the U.S. just sort of packed up and left them.
Mm. Janet Fleischman, as you look at what's going on there now, I'm sure a lot of Americans would like to understand, okay, if we go in, what does that produce? Does that change things? The big upheaval in Liberian politics in recent times dates back to 1980. As I understand it, the country had really been dominated by the descendants of those returned slaves from the United States for a long, long time, the so-called Americo-Liberians.
Mm-hmm.
In 1980, Samuel Doe, a local or native Liberian, overthrew that rule. And ever since, there's been seemingly a competition for power. What are the basic elements of the rivalry that's going on there right now? And do you believe that a U.S. or U.N. intervention would solve it?
Well, I think it's important to note a point that was made earlier in the program, which is that what we've seen in Liberia for a very long time is effective manipulation of ethnic conflict. These were conflicts that didn't necessarily exist in any kind of lethal form beforehand, but they were used very effectively to maintain power by various factions. And what you see now, in a sort of curious way, is a reincarnation of some of these same factional divisions in new rebel groups that morph from one to the other. But ultimately, they are at core very similar in the way they have splintered along ethnic lines.
But is there a footing for peace and stability looking forward here? If several thousand U.S. or U.N. troops are sent in, is there something to build on, to work with? Or is it likely to be a perpetual commitment to peacekeeping there?
Well, I think the very important thing to remember about Liberia, even under the worst days of Doe and under Taylor, is that they have had an extraordinarily vibrant civil society. Independent journalists, human rights activists, mm-hmm. lawyers, religious figures who have been active and spoken out, unarmed political opposition. Now, many of them have had to leave the country at this stage under threats often of their life, but they remain very engaged and very active. The problem in Liberia is that the people with the guns can't be the only ones who sit at the table. And that's the crucial challenge. Can you create a space, maybe by using some kind of international peacekeeping force, so that the unarmed opposition and the civil society representatives who are genuinely representing the people and not the armed factions, can you create enough space and time for them to establish some form of control?
Janet Fleischman, Sebastian Junger, please stand by. I want to invite our callers in. Rudy's calling from Worcester, Massachusetts. Hi, Rudy. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Fine. Good evening.
Good. I mean, I'm just glad to hear something very important like this about American troops going to Liberia, because I personally, my father was a politician in Liberia, and then he worked for the Samedo regime, which, I mean, things wasn't better that time in Liberia also.
So your family was or is Liberian, and you want to see U.S. troops go there, Rudy?
Oh, sure. I have a mother and sister that live in Liberia, and I've been in the United States for a long time, for 12 years, and I haven't seen them, and I can only talk to them on the phone.
You know? What do they tell you about circumstances there now?
It's very tough. I mean, I call them every day to hear from them, to see how they're doing. And sometimes it's hard for me to go through the phone line.
Mm-hmm.
It's very tough for us. We say in the United States and things are not going on. I mean, it worries everybody in here. I mean, it would be so grateful to see America to do something about Liberia. It's about time for America to step out to do something about Liberia.
Rudy, we've got it. Thanks very much for your call. Sebastian, you've seen a lot of tough situations around the world. When you compare what you saw just 8 days ago in Liberia to other circumstances, does this above and beyond the bloodletting and chaos you've seen elsewhere, does it have a unique claim on U.S. or U.N. intervention?
Well, first of all, it's the worst thing I've ever seen as a journalist personally. And I have been in a lot of conflicts, but the level of suffering and despair, I just was really, ultimately, it was just numbing.
Is it from hunger? Is it from the violence, the killing, the kidnapping of kids? What's going on?
Everything. I mean, something like a full quarter of the population has been displaced. Hundreds of thousands of people just squatting in the streets of Monrovia because they've been driven out of their already poor villages. Without water, without rice, they get cholera. The government itself, the Taylor government, mortared a group of thousands of refugees that had crowded into the U.S. embassy compound.
Fired mortars into the U.S. embassy compound,
yes.
On Liberians.
Yes, and that, as far as anyone could tell, that was done not by the rebels, who were quite far away from Monrovia at that point, but by some faction of the government forces themselves as a way of scaring the people and sending a message to the U.S. So the people that I met were more scared, as far as I could tell, they were more scared of their own government than they were of the rebels. The looting was completely out of control. When the fighting started, most of the government forces would use that as an excuse to go loot the neighborhoods that had been evacuated because of the fighting.
Mm.
It's just absolutely terrifying situation. People getting harassed and sometimes killed at checkpoints. The people had no trust at all in their own government, in their own military.
Janet Fleischman, earlier today, President Charles Taylor told the New York Times that he believed the United States was supporting his rebel enemies. Does the U.S. have a player, have an ally in this fight or not?
I don't think you can say that the U.S. is supporting the rebel allies. The U.S. did provide some support, military assistance, to Guinea, which serves as a rear base for the LURD, one of the main rebel groups.
Mm-hmm.
So to that extent, Taylor has accused the U.S. of supporting LURD by having provided a certain amount of assistance to Guinea. But I don't think you can say that the U.S. really has provided any kind of... I don't think there's any evidence that the U.S. has provided assistance directly to either of these two main rebel groups.
Janet Fleischman, Sebastian Junger, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Robert Morris. He's joining us from Minneapolis. He was Assistant Minister for Public Affairs from 1987 to 90 under President Samuel Doe and Assistant Director General for Liberian Broadcasting System from 1992 to 1996. Good evening and welcome, Robert Morris.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure being on your show.
Thank you very much for joining us. Question of the hour is whether or not U.S. troops should go into Liberia. What's your position?
Oh, certainly. I'm 100% in favor of the troops going to Liberia for several reasons. One, Liberia and America are the best of friends. And secondly, the troops going to Liberia will help to ensure peace and to end the destruction of lives and properties. Since the war started in 1989, more than 250,000 Liberians and foreigners have been killed. Secondly, the forces going to Liberia will also help to restore democracy and will help to distribute humanitarian aid to the people.
There's a lot of talk these days about U.S. troops being in Iraq for years to come. There's no end point to the commitment in Afghanistan currently. How long do you think American troops would be needed in Liberia to help stabilize that country and get it back on its feet, Robert Morse?
Well, I don't want to give any time frame, but I'm very optimistic that forces will not be there for that long because we all are tired of the war. Both groups who are fighting on the government forces and the various rebel groups are not tired because for almost 14 to 15 years we have been fighting, and the U.S. forces going to Liberia will help to restore peace, and I do want to believe that these troops will stay there for a long time.
You know, President Bush is headed to Africa any minute now, taking off from Washington if he hasn't already. But he's not stopping in Liberia. You know that earlier on he said that Africa was not strategic to U.S. interests globally. Do you believe that this administration or any administration, but particularly this one, would send U.S. troops, given all their other global commitments of the American military, will send U.S. troops into Liberia?
Oh, definitely. I'm very optimistic that U.S. forces will go to Liberia because Liberia and America have a very special relationship. If you can recall, historically, Liberia was the first country in Africa that free slaves from America went to Liberia.
But you read the newspapers in the United States until this last weekend when there was talk about U.S. troops going in. Liberia is nearly invisible.
Oh, well, for now, perhaps because of the war, but prior to the war, Liberia and America were the best of friends. And Liberia had degenerated for the war. And I want to believe that notwithstanding, the United States will still have some consideration and send troops to our country.
Sebastian Junger, it's fascinating to hear in Robert Morris this faith in a relationship with the United States that I'm not sure many Americans have paid much attention to or perhaps even feel.
No, you're absolutely right. People over there are much more aware of the relationship than people here. But that said, we've intervened in other countries like Kosovo and saved, in my opinion, tens of thousands of lives potentially from by keeping those wars from spreading. I think our obligations to Liberia, maybe they're certainly not strategic, but that's a very, very cynical standard for intervention. If this nation calls itself the policeman of the world and asks for an exception from the world court because we're in a position of making mistakes that other countries aren't, then we do have to fill those shoes. And it really doesn't make sense to ask for an exemption from the world court and not act like the policeman we describe ourselves to be. And this is a perfect place to start. I can't imagine, I literally cannot imagine a Liberian fighter taking a shot at the American soldiers. The fighters wear the American flag on their back when they fight. The identification with America is incredibly strong.
So you think that they would basically fold if American soldiers came on the scene?
I don't even think they'd be folding. I think they would be standing at attention saluting. I mean, certainly the people on the street, but even the fighters themselves, I think they would hold the U.S. Marines in such awe. They emulate everything American. They emulate sort of L.A. Rap style. They emulate the U.S. military. They emulate everything American. If the real thing showed up on the streets of Monrovia, those kids, and they really are kids, they're 14, 15 years old, they would just be standing there in awe.
There is suffering. There's a call for the United States to go in. What do you think? We're at 1-800-423-8255. John is calling from Spokane, Washington. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I just want to express my opinion. My only experience with Liberia is through my son, who teaches me a little bit of geography in school.
Okay.
But I think that I'm going to take a little devil's advocate point of view here. I think that the Bush administration is definitely promoting oil interests around the world. And I think that there is a strategic opportunity in helping stabilize the government of Liberia and surrounding countries. A stable Africa would definitely promote a strong economic environment for American oil companies. And I think in terms of strategy, in terms of justifying it from the conservative point of view, I think that we should definitely be in Africa, be in Liberia, and be there now.
So moral, you're putting moral considerations aside and looking at oil interests and economic interests and saying, in your, to your mind, those justify U.S. troops going in.
Absolutely. And then the moral interests are a bonus.
Well, it's a big bonus, John. Thank you for your call. Janet Fleischman, how about it? We associate diamonds with Liberia. I personally don't know about their oil resources. Are they significant?
No, I think the main resources you're talking about are diamonds and timber, and I don't think there's oil issues there. And I think you have to realize that if the U.S. goes in, they're going in for a very short time, and they're going to try to hand this off to a U.N. force. So even if you take a best-case scenario, as Sebastian was sort of implying, that they're going to drop their guns and salute, you have to realize that there are fighters from factions that are throughout the country who have been treated abysmally, who are often drugged up and pushed to fight by the horrendous situation that they have suffered. Sometimes these are kids who were recruited as child soldiers, who witnessed their families being killed and joined the faction that actually killed their family so as to protect themselves and their siblings. You have some very, very horrific stories of the toll that this war, this series of wars, has taken on the civilian population. And maybe you would find people burying their guns. They've done that before. But then they go back and they get them when they need them. So just going in for a little while and stabilizing the situation is only a piece of the problem, because you have this situation of so many guns in the area, so much ability to restart these wars, so many of the state actors in the region who have been supporting and supplying some of the non-state actors, some of the rebel groups. It's really a regional conflict, and it needs to be looked at in terms of, you know, the steps that need to be taken and the realities of how you would pass this on.
Sounds like going in and getting out would be two different things. Robert Morris, I know we just have you for a moment more.
Yes.
The talk is of President Charles Taylor perhaps going into exile in Nigeria. To your mind, is that a good solution, or is that a gold-plated asylum for a criminal?
Well, it's better for him to leave the country now, because the country is in chaos, and if he should remain there, the chaos will continue. For now, I'm very happy that he could leave, could answer the call of the President of the United States to take his bow out of the country and go to Nigeria.
So you'd be happy to see him go. Robert Morris, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
Robert Morris was Assistant Director General for the Liberian Broadcasting System from 1992 to 1996. He joined us from Minneapolis. We are joined tonight by Sebastian Younger and Janet Fleischman. You can join the conversation as well. We're talking about America's African cousin, Liberia, the fighting there, the suffering there, and the call for U.S. intervention in Liberia's civil war. Do you believe the Bush administration is seriously considering sending troops into Liberia? Do you want American boots on the ground in an African intervention? And what about exile in Nigeria for Charles Taylor? Should oppressive dictators get gold-plated exile or jail time? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about America's African cousin, Liberia, and the call for U.S. intervention in Liberia's civil war. Freed slaves from the United States settled Liberia in 1822. Does America still have an obligation there? How enduring are the demands of history? Are you ready to buy into a Liberian intervention? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guests tonight are Janet Fleischman. She's Washington Director for Africa for Human Rights Watch. And Sebastian Younger, author of The Perfect Storm and Fire. He's just back from an assignment in Africa for Vanity Fair back 8 days ago from Liberia. You can join the conversation as well. Kevin's calling from Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hello, I got a question for Mr. Sebastian. If this is for humanitarian reasons or a conservatism reason for geopolitics,
okay,
how come the people that promote these things to use our young men and women to put them in their boots and send them overseas, how come they don't send their relatives and themselves or not down at the recruiting office if this is really in their heart? How come they don't join the Army, the Marines, or the Air Force? or the Navy and take part in this if it's such a good thing? Why does everybody else have to do the bidding with young men and women and not themselves show leadership in these things?
So Kevin, you're not enthusiastic about the idea of U.S. intervention. Let me put it to Sebastian Junger. Sebastian, you can hear the question there. What do you think?
I didn't exactly understand the question, but
you know the general drift. When people support U.S. intervention, they should support it with their own feet, their own boots, their own enlistment in the military. And I guess behind that is this feeling in the country. On the one hand, as you described it, there is a big and obvious manifest U.S. commitment to going into places where it feels necessary. But you hear people saying, well, it's easy to call for intervention, but what if it was you in the military or your children in the military? Would one be as quick to call for it?
Well, if I had a child in the military, I would certainly rather them go to Liberia than Iraq. I think if we look at the experience of the French in Ivory Coast or the British in Sierra Leone, an American soldier going to Liberia has an awfully good chance of coming home coming home safely.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure in terms of policymaking. I mean, the people that make policy have never gone to war. It can be expected in this country, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really hard to deny that if America wants to act in the powerful, magnanimous way that she's seen in the world, this is a perfect opportunity to show that we do care about humanity, even when there's no strategic interest, and that we, with a very powerful military, can stop the suffering, people suffering anywhere in the world, if we choose to. It's a very good, very, very good and easy place to try it for the first time.
Sebastian Junger, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Chester Crocker. He's joining us from Washington. He's professor of strategic studies at Georgetown University, specializing in the field of conflict management and mediation. He was assistant secretary of state for African affairs during the Reagan administration for a long time, from 1981 to 1989. Chester Crocker, good evening and welcome.
Good to be with you.
I guess first question, do you think the talk of U.S. Military intervention in Liberia is serious? Do you think this is really something being fully, seriously considered by the Bush administration?
Yes, I do.
And why? Why now?
Well, I think there's a number of things converging. Of course, the fact of a presidential trip to the region tends to accelerate the consideration of something which I'm sure a number of policy players would rather would just go away. But you can't duck when you're on a presidential trip, and you're going to be visiting with heads of state and host countries in a number of parts of Africa who actually have some expectations for American leadership in this particular crisis in Liberia. As has been said, there were responses by the Brits and the French and the UN in neighboring countries, and this is really an area where the Americans have the natural lead.
But could President Bush not fob it off? 13 U.S. soldiers arrived there today to do a survey of Liberia. Another dozen or more are headed there. Could he not say, well, we're looking at the situation, come home and forget about it?
Well, of course he could do that. But my suggestion to you would be that that's not the way he functions and that's not really mm-hmm. What he's made this conversation all about. He's setting himself up to look kind of silly, I think, if that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I would argue that, on the contrary, that he may use the bully pulpit of his trip and his presence amongst African leaders, visiting with them, listening to them, talking to them, to actually indicate a decision that would have us participate in a process of response to the Liberian crisis, not just take it over and do it ourselves unilaterally, but to participate in consulting and then putting some boots on the ground ourselves.
The president did say that he would not take no for an answer from Charles Taylor in response to Bush's request for him to step down. What about the issue of duration of commitment? If troops go in there, U.S., U.N., or otherwise, Chester Crocker, what do you think that intervention would be getting into?
I think what we're looking at is trying to put a stability force on the ground for a period of months, leading to a transition and a handoff to a regular blue-helmeted UN operation down the road once the political process has taken some steps forward. Right now, what that very fragile process requires is genuine stability in the capital city and beyond it. And that can be accomplished without it being all American by having an allied force, a coalition force drawn from West Africa, perhaps from other parts of Africa, and maybe even from outside of Africa, to join with us in a relatively modest commitment, is the way I would describe it.
And it sounds as if you were a betting man, Chester Crocker, you would imagine U.S. troops there before too long.
I do expect that to happen, yes.
Chester Crocker, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
You're most welcome.
Chester Crocker was Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs from 1981 to 1989. Wille is calling from Lowell, Massachusetts. Hi, Wille. You're on the air.
How are you?
Great, thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you for this program. Like I said earlier, I'm happy to listen to Chester because I'm a political asylee.
Are you an exile from Liberia?
Yes, I am.
How long since you were there?
I was the 1996 April 6th episode was when I left.
And why did you leave? Did you fear for your life?
I really did. I was working for the Ministry of Planning, and I was kind of pretty much visible in the government. And so since Taylor and his cohorts were coming to take over, I had to flee for my life and my entire family. But I guess the point I want to make here is, I feel that this has to be resolved by Liberia. It's not so much of the United States going in. I don't know how much commitment the United States is going to go in there with. And I'm kind of skeptical about that.
So do you think U.S. troops should go in?
That's the decision of the U.S. government. But the first thing is, I want to correct these two things.
Okay.
Liberia is not America's stepchild or America's cousin. Liberia is America's ally. I mean, we
Fair
stood
enough.
With the U.S. We stood with the U.S. all through our historical experience as a modern Liberian nation.
So let's get over this looking down the nose thing and call it an ally, you say. Yeah, okay. Number two?
Yeah, we should be called an ally because, during the Cold War, Liberia was the relay station for all the U.S. intelligence operations in Africa.
We got that. My time's running out. Your second point, Wille?
My second point is that, the Liberian people should take this responsibility upon themselves. They should not wait for America to come and do their housekeeping. And whatever interim government is formed now should never include any of the rebel groups.
It's a tall order, but we've got it. Thanks for your call. Sebastian Junger, when you look across Africa, you know this is hardly the only country that has problems. We've seen British and French interventions recently. Is this just what we're going to be seeing for the coming years or decades? Or are we just at a moment where we need a quick in and out and things may be patched up?
Well, I'm not an Africa expert at all. I've worked in Sierra Leone and in Liberia. I was briefly in Ivory Coast.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Sierra Leone when the rebels started taking, up to a total of 500 UN peacekeepers hostage. And that terrible situation was only resolved by the British troops that came in and really saved the day.
Mm-hmm.
And within a few weeks, the situation was normalized. Within a year, it was really pretty well-functioning country. So I really can't speak for the rest of Africa, but Liberia seems to be the exact same kind of case.
There's a call for getting in there and getting in there now. Sebastian Junger, we're out of time, but it's always great to have you, and we thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Thank you.
Sebastian Junger, joining us from New York City, author of The Perfect Storm and Fire. He just came back from Liberia for Vanity Fair. And Janet Fleischman, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
Janet Fleischman is Washington Director for Africa for Human Rights Watch. You can continue this conversation at onpointradio.org. In a moment, reflections on the conflict from a Liberian-American poet. This is On Point. When Providence, Rhode Island resident San Tao fled Liberia in 1991, he left behind family, friends, and a big part of himself. 12 years of civil war later, he has still not been able to return home. To deal with his loss and the conflict that has ravaged his homeland, Ntao has turned to poetry. In this radio diary, San Tao shares some of the poetry the conflict in his homeland has aroused.
This is a poem that I always read when I think about Liberia. Even now, as Liberia is in the news, I think about this a lot. I call it When It Is Calm Again. The storm has ceased, but it's raining still. The thunders roll and lightnings flash. The ground is firm, but it's slippery and wet. Oh, but soon the rain will stop, and it will be dry again. But a storm so sudden and strangely cruel will one day cease, but will never die, because the pain and anguish it has caused, we may forgive, but we will never forget. When it is dry again, we will rise and search for friends and families and loved ones lost. But who amongst them will be there to find? What damages are there have we yet to know? When it is dry again, we will build new homes. We will start new families, and we will make new friends. But to the memories of those we've lost, we will remember the storm, even when it is calm. That was When It Is Calm Again. There is this other one that I think it's just, it follows this other poem. I call this Don't Rock This Boat No More. Don't rock this boat no more. Please, don't rock this boat again. For we have drifted long in these troubled waters. Now we just can't take it no more. The memories we hold are too painful to bear. But we take comfort in this new hope of peace. Though strong winds of anger threaten ugly tides, we say land is in sight, and we now sail in shallow waters. We felt this boat rocked from time to time. We felt the fear, the sorrow, and pain. We may not like the ones who stare, but it's a chance we've got, and one we're willing to take. So go, my friends, and tell all Liberians. Tell the angry ones to hold their peace. Tell the weeping ones we share their pain. Tell the confused ones to watch and wait, but tell them that no one must rock this boat again. Let our sailors join in and help us sail, and let our builders make ready to rebuild our land. Let our teachers get set to teach our children, and let our doctors care for and treat our wounds. But as we steer our boat towards land at last, let no one, and I mean no one, dare rock this boat again. That's Don't Rock This Boat No More. I know that there are people who are coming to Liberia for different reasons. Even as we speak, there are those people who are seeking to buy themselves positions. So they're making negotiations with rebel leaders. But, hey, all of that will only rock the boat. The best way forward for Liberia right now is not by way of the gun. It has to be by the ballot boxes. If anyone feels that they have legitimate claims to power in Liberia, then let them please just go on and form a political party and come up and contest elections. Before the war, a lot of Liberians, you know, saw themselves as an extension of, you know, America. I don't know why, but, you know, there's something about America. The average Liberian, like my father-in-law was telling me, said the average Liberian thinks that one American soldier can bring this whole war to an end. I mean, that's just the way, you know, just to express the sentiments on the ground in terms of the Americans and their involvement.
San Tao is a Liberian exile. He lives in Providence, Rhode Island. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.